for sending out the emails and the reminders. And it was really Seth's insight to come up with a Mexican theme in honor of walls and Purim. Purim has a major theme of walls. And so Seth had the genius to realize it's also, you know, current events. There's a discussion of a wall and who's going to pay for the wall. So that's really, very connected to Purim. You know, one of the themes that my teacher, Rav Wolfson, says every year is that the Gemara says, Achashverosh, it may not really be his name. It could be that Achashverosh, that's really a reference to God. Achashverosh stands for Misha Ha'achris V'Hareshah Shalo, the one who the end and the beginning belong to him. If you combine the word Achris, end, and Reshus, beginning, it becomes Achashverosh. And the other thing that the Gemara says about Achashverosh is that maybe the name was Achashverosh because that was the reaction of people when they would hear his name. When they would hear his name, they'd say, ugh. They'd say, oh my gosh, my head hurts. Because he was the tax man. He kept raising the taxes. And because he had these huge, huge taxes, when they heard his name, they would just say, ugh, Leroshi, oh, my head hurts. Just hearing him, I'm already feeling the stress of all the tax bills. So Rav Wolfson said, that's why it says at the very end of the Megillah, Vayasem HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas Ala Aretz V'yeye Hayam. And HaChashverosh, the king, placed the tax on the state and all the cities in the sea. So why do we need to hear about the taxes? The answer is, because how did the Megillah begin? Vayehi b'yemei Achashverosh. It was in the days of Achashverosh. And the Gemara says in the Maseches Megillah, wherever it says Vayehi b'yemei, it's a sign of sadness. It's like Vay, hi, whoa, whoa. These are the days of Achashverosh, Ach L'Rosho. Everybody's hitting their head because the taxes are so high. So the end of the Megillah is again, Vayasam HaMelech HaChashverosh, Mas Al Haaretz V'Yayam. Achashverosh, the king, put a tax on the land and on all the islands in the sea. In other words, it's the story starting all over again. Because it's not the same Achashverosh. It's another king. When they talk about his name, they also hit their head and they say, Ach L'Rosho. And it's saying, Vayasam HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas. That king is also putting a tax. Because the story of the Megillah, the word Megillah is like the word Galgal, a circle. It keeps rolling. It keeps happening again and again. It happened then. It happens again. It happens again. It keeps repeating itself. And every generation, they're writing another Megillah Esther. So, you know, Seth was very, you know, brilliant to realize, you know, someday there's going to be another Megillah Esther about what's going on nowadays with all the various personalities and the newspapers. Hashem's going to put together out of it a Megillah Esther. And somehow out of this, all these personalities and all these events, the Jewish people are being saved. And Am Yisrael is getting closer to the redemption. And we wait for that day when we're going to get that Megillas Esther. So that's the theme of tonight. Walls. Walls with Mexico. Walls and cities. And why is it that the miracle of Purim is all about the division? That seems very, very strange. Because if we think about the story of Purim, a big part of the story of Purim was unity. What enabled the Jewish people to defeat Haman was unity. Because let's review just a small aspect of the story. Achashverosh elevates Haman and says whatever Haman wants, that's the law of the land. He gives Haman his ring. And Haman makes a rule that wherever he walks by, everybody needs to bow to him. And there's one person, Mordechai, who refuses to bow as Haman walks by. So Haman decides that it's not enough that Mordechai needs to be punished, but the whole nation of Mordechai needs to be punished because Mordechai is not bowing to him. So Haman decides to make a decree to wipe out all the Jews. So he throws lots, and through the lots he gets to a date, the 13th day of the last month, the month of Adar. This is the day when all the enemies are to gather and to wipe out the Jews. So he goes to Achashverosh and he offers Achashverosh 10,000 loaves of silver. First he starts with a whole description about why the Jews are terrible. They're this nation that's Mefuzar, Mefurad, scattered and divided, Beinu Amim, amongst all the nations. They don't fulfill the rules of the king. It's not worthwhile for the king to let them be. If the king so desires, it should be written to wipe them out. And 10,000 kikar kesef I'll give to the king's treasury. So Achashverosh says, no, there's no need. You know, I'm okay. I don't need the money. Go do to them whatever you want. I don't care. So Haman sends out the letters that the Jews should be wiped out on this day. All the enemies of the Jews, Tzorei Ar-Yudim, should gather and wipe out the Jews, B'yom Echad, in one day, Tafen Hashim, women and children, wipe them all out. So Mordechai, he gets access to these letters. When Mordechai hears, Mordechai makes a protest. He goes out into the street, he puts on sackcloth, he starts screaming, he makes a whole scene. Esther is worried what's going on. She sends out Hasach to see what's going on. Hasach comes back and says, Mordechai is telling us that all the Jews are going to be wiped out in 11 months from now, on the 13th day of Adar. And therefore, Mordechai wants you to go to the king and to appeal to reverse the decree. So Esther says back, everybody knows that if the king doesn't invite you, you can't walk in. If you walk in, the king's going to kill you, unless the king suddenly decides to show you favor. The king has invited me for 30 days. How can I go? So Mordechai sends back to her, the Jews are going to be saved regardless. You're going to be lost if you don't save the Jews. Who knows? Maybe for this moment, Hashem made you queen. So what does Esther say? Leich go, kinos es kol Yehudim. Gather together, unite all the Jews. A Beit Knesset is a place of the gathering. So all the Jews should gather together. And all the Jews should fast for me, not to eat or to drink for 3 days. And then I will be fasting too, and then I'm going to go to the king and we'll see whatever it is will be. That's what Esther says. So what caused the miracle is that all the Jews gathered together. All the Jews were united. All the Jews were praying. All the Jews were praying for Esther, praying that Hashem should help her to defeat this decree. And yet, when we celebrate Purim, the Jews are not united, because Purim is celebrated on two separate days. Those who live in cities that are open, they celebrate Purim on the 14th of Adar. But those who live in cities that have a wall going back all the way to the time when Yehoshua entered the land of Israel, Yehoshua, how could it be that a holiday, which is all about the Jewish people uniting together, how can it be that such a holiday is celebrated by dividing up the Jews? The Jews of the unwalled city celebrate on the 14th, and the Jews of the walled city celebrate on the 15th. Doesn't seem right. So one answer, this is a question that's raised by the Rishonim, by the medieval authorities. One answer is offered by the Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman. And it's really a surprising answer. The Ramban says, or Moshe ben Nachman says, that what happened in the story, the Jews found out about these letters, they were in crisis, and Mordechai sent a message, everyone should fast for 3 days, and then we're going to try something. So the Jews, what was the crisis? The letters said that on the 13th day of Adar, the enemies of the Jews had free license from the king to kill out all the Jews, man, woman, and child. So the Jews in the walled cities, they felt, you know, we're not under such stress because we have our walls. The walls of our city will protect us. If the enemies come to attack us, we're just going to lock the gates. And we have our walls, and they only have one day to fight, the 13th of Adar. After that, they don't have permission to go kill us. So we'll fight them off on the 13th of Adar, and we'll be safe. So when everyone was praying, the Jews of the walled cities weren't praying. They thought, we're safe and secure with our wall. So therefore, when the Jews were ultimately saved, the way it was set up was that the Jews of the unwalled cities, they'll celebrate on the 14th. The Jews of the walled cities, they'll celebrate on a different day. They're not included in the celebration of everybody else, because they're being punished, because they didn't really include themselves in the crisis of everyone else. They thought that they were safe with their walls. That's what the Ramban says. So the Ran finds this very difficult. The Ran says, We know that in the Megillah, the Jews, in the end, Esther goes to the king, and the king says, I want to give you things, what do you want? Esther says, well, I want that you come to a party with me and Haman. So he and Haman come to a party. At the party, what do you want? Come back to another party tomorrow. And then already, by the time of tomorrow, the fortune has turned. Haman is already not as powerful as he was. And Esther says to the king, Haman wants to wipe out the Jews. Just spare us. And the king gets all angry. The king goes out, and eventually he kills Haman. And then Mordechai takes over for Haman. So what happens is that when Esther goes several months later to ask the king to reverse the decree of Haman, the king says, no, whatever decrees I make can't be reversed, but you can write different decrees. So Esther writes that the Jews have the right to defend themselves on the 13th of Adar, and that the Jews could kill all those who hate the Jews. So comes the 13th of Adar, there's a big war, and the Jews kill 75,000 anti-Semites. So they go, and Esther goes to the king on the 13th of Adar and reports what happened all over the kingdom. 75,000 anti-Semites were killed. So the king says, okay, what do you want? I'll give you anything you want. Esther says, give the Jews of Shushan another day to kill anti-Semites. So the king says, okay, the Jews of Shushan can have another day to kill anti-Semites. And the Jews of Shushan kill another 500 anti-Semites for that next day. And then the Jews of Shushan celebrate on the 15th of Adar. So what we see is that the Jews of Shushan, they celebrated on the 15th of Adar because they were killing anti-Semites for the 13th and the 14th. Whereas the Jews everywhere else, they celebrate on the 14th of Adar because they were only killing anti-Semites on the 13th and they rested on the 14th. So it's not what the Ramban says. The Ramban says it's that the Jews of the walled cities, they didn't participate in the crisis, therefore they should have a different day. That's not the story that we have in the Megillah. In the Megillah it says that the Jews of Shushan, they have a different day because they were fighting on the 14th. So the 14th wasn't their day to celebrate. They were still killing enemies on the 14th. They celebrated on the 15th. And the Talmud Yerushalmi says, really, Shushan, that the time for Shushan is the 15th. The time for all the other cities is the 14th. But if we would say cities like Shushan, who have a wall at the times of Shushan, they celebrate on the 15th, then Yerushalayim would not be a walled city. Because Yerushalayim didn't have a wall in those days. It was destroyed. As we read in the book of Daniel and Ezra, it took time to rebuild the wall of Yerushalayim. Jerusalem had no wall, so it would be an insult to Jerusalem that Jerusalem is going to be a city that doesn't have a wall. And Jerusalem didn't have a wall then, so therefore they went back and they dated to the days of Yehoshua. Really, the point is, the 15th should be celebrated because that's when the people of Shushan rested. And then we go back to the days of Yehoshua ben Nun in order to give honor to Yerushalayim. That's what the Ran says. So why is it so important in this holiday to give honor to Yerushalayim? And because we want to give honor to Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim has to be like the city Shushan. And since the city Shushan is celebrating the 15th, Yerushalayim has to celebrate the 15th. So a very powerful answer is suggested by the author of Lecha Dodi. The author of the Lecha Dodi prayer was Rav Shlomo Alkabetz. Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, he wrote a commentary to Megillat Esther called Manos Halevi. So in his commentary, he suggests the following. The Talmud tells us in Tractate Megillah, the students asked Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, why did the Jews of that generation deserve destruction? Because here, Achashverosh had given the permission to Haman to write whatever he wants, and Haman wrote that all the Jews are to be wiped out in one day by the anti-Semites of the kingdom. All the Jews could be wiped out, man, woman, and child. So if Haman can create such a decree, that means that in heaven, God was agreeing somewhat to that decree, at least initially. Then God reversed it. So why did the Jews deserve such a decree, such a fright that they were going to be wiped out? So Shimon Yochai said to his students, well, you tell me. They said to him, well, we think because the Jews participated in the party of Achashverosh. The Jews went to the party of Achashverosh in the beginning of the story, and that's why they deserve to be wiped out. So he said back to them, then only the Jews of Shushan should have been killed, because they're the ones who went to the party. The Jews of all the rest of the world should not have been killed. So they said to him, okay, so you tell us, what's the reason? He said, the reason is that they bowed to an idol. So then the student said, when do they bow to an idol? In the beginning of the book of Daniel, we read that Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. He has a dream and he doesn't remember his dream. So he says to his people, you better tell me what I dreamed, and you better tell me what the meaning of my dream was. And if you don't tell me my dream and the meaning of my dream, I'm going to kill you all. So his people in his palace say, how could we know what you dreamed? So that's your problem. You need to figure out what I dreamed, and I'll remember it once you say it to me, and tell me the meaning of the dream. So Daniel, he prays to God. And he says, God, let me have the chance to know it all, to show a Kiddush Hashem that the servants of God have prophecy. And God gives the answer to Daniel. So Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, this was your dream. You dreamed of an idol, a statue, with a head of gold and arms of silver and a torso of copper and legs of bronze and a stone that came and knocked the statue over. And now I'll tell you the meaning of the dream. You are the head of gold. In other words, this dream is a dream of all of human history. There are going to be four empires, the Babylonian, then the Persian, then the Greek, finally the Roman. And eventually, there's going to be a little stone. The stone is the symbol of David HaMelech, of King David, who killed Goliath by throwing a stone at Goliath. And that stone is representative of Mashiach. Mashiach's going to come and knock over the statue of the four empires, and the Jews will no longer be tortured and enslaved under the empires of the world. And you, Nebuchadnezzar, you don't have to worry about it because you're the head. Till the Jews come with the stone, it's going to be the bronze, it's going to be the Romans. So you don't have to worry about it. You're the head of gold. That's what Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar is very happy. That was in fact the dream, and that's in fact the meaning of the dream. Later in the book of Daniel, we read that Nebuchadnezzar makes this huge statue of gold, and he puts it up in a valley, Bikatura, and he commands everyone to bow to his statue, and if they won't bow to the statue, they're going to be thrown into a furnace. So there are three people, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They refuse to bow to the statue. They're thrown into the furnace, and a miracle occurs. Even in the furnace, they're alive, and nothing happens to them. So all the other Jews apparently bowed to that statue. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, since the Jews bowed to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, that's what they deserve to be wiped out. So the student said back to him, well, if that's the case, then why were the Jews forgiven? So he said, the Jews, even when they bowed to the statue, they didn't really mean it. Deep down, they were not accepting fealty or displaying fealty to the statue. They weren't displaying loyalty to it. So God also, he put them under stress. You're all going to be wiped out. He didn't really mean it. You're going to be wiped out, and then he reversed it. So that's the Gemara in Masechet Megillah. So the Manos HaLevi, Rav Shlomo Alkavetz, he asks the following question. He says, number one, it seems like these are very different sins. You know, the sin of bowing to a statue sounds like the sin of idolatry. That's pretty big. It's one of the Ten Commandments. Versus going to Achashverosh's party, it's unclear what in fact is the sin of going to Achashverosh's party. And the whole story of bowing to the statue is really a very strange story, because the Talmud tells us in Masechet Pesachim that had Nebuchadnezzar tortured Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they would have been allowed to bow to the statue. Understand, if it's idolatry, you can't worship idols ever. Why would they be allowed to bow to the statue if they were going to be tortured? So maybe there's a whole different explanation here. What was the party of Achashverosh all about? So at the very beginning of the Megillah, we read, Bishna Shalosh L'Malcho, on the third year of his rule, Keshev HaSamelech Achashverosh, when Achashverosh sat on his throne, he made a party. So one second, if it's when he sat on his throne, it's not the third year of his rule. It's the first year of his rule. That's when he sits on his throne. If it's the third year of his rule, it's not when he sat on his throne. So the Gemara explains, what does it mean he sat on his throne? He felt secure in his throne. Achashverosh was worried. The prophet Yirmiyahu had said, the Jews are going to be exiled for 70 years, and then the Jews are going to leave. So he was worried, I'm not going to really be a ruler, because the Jews are going to leave. I'm not going to have the Jews under me. But in the third year of his rule, he was, okay, now I feel good. Because now I know that the Jews are not getting out. How so? Because he figured there's a calculation. Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 45 years. After Nebuchadnezzar, his son Evil Merodach ruled for 23 years. So 23 plus 45 is 68. Belshazzar, the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, ruled for 2 years. And he thought that was the 70 years. So he thought when he got to his 3rd year that the 70 years are up, the Jews aren't going out. He made a party and he used the utensils of the Beit HaMikdash. He was assassinated that night. He was killed that night. And after him there was Koresh, who ruled for 5 years. And after Koresh, there was Achashverosh for 3 years. So Achashverosh figured Belshazzar was wrong when he thought it was 70 years, because he was counting from when Nebuchadnezzar began to be king. But he should have counted from when Nebuchadnezzar first defeated the Jews, which was in the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's rule. So he's missing 8 years from the count. So 5 years of Koresh and 3 years of me, that's the 8 years. So now it's the 70th year, and the Jews still haven't gotten out. So since it's 70 years and the Jews haven't gotten out, the Jews are never going to get out. So he made a party to celebrate that the Jews were never getting out. The party of Achashverosh was a party saying, the Jews are not going to leave. I'm going to be the king. The Jews are in exile forever. Now let's go to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar made a statue in the Valley of Dura that was all gold. What was his dream? His dream was a head of gold and arms of silver and a body of copper and legs of bronze. Representative of what? Of empire switching. First the Babylonians, then being replaced by the Persians, being replaced by the Greeks, being replaced by the Romans. But if there's a statue of all gold, what is the idea? It's just Nebuchadnezzar. It's just Babylon forever. In other words, that the Jews are not going to be redeemed. The Jews are never going to leave. So actually, both the sin of going to Achashverosh's party and the sin of bowing to Nebuchadnezzar's idol are really not idolatry. They're both the sin of Jews saying, we don't believe in redemption. We don't believe that we're going to go out. And that's terrible. We have to believe that we're going to go out. We have to live life thinking that, who knows, maybe right now we're about to go out. You know, there were rabbis who literally lived ready to leave. They say the Chafetz Chaim, he had a suitcase packed, ready to go. When Mashiach's going to come, he was ready to go, ready to leave right away. And when he saw that the Jews were going back to Israel and setting up agricultural settlements, he wanted to go move to Israel because he felt it's about to happen. And he couldn't go because the rest of the community wouldn't let him leave. They needed him in Poland. So he said, well, at least let me prepare by starting to learn how to be a Kohen, because he was a Kohen. So he made a special yeshiva, a kolel, to study all the laws of sacrifices, to study kachim. He made the first yeshiva dedicated to the study of kachim in order to prepare for Mashiach, who's about to come, because Mashiach's about to be here. That's the way a Jew is supposed to live. A Jew is supposed to live feeling Mashiach could come any second. We could leave in a moment. And we don't belong anywhere but the land of Israel. But what happened then? The Jews went to Achashverosh's party, which was celebrating that the 70 years are up and the Jews aren't going out. They had bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's idol, which was saying that the Jews are going to be under the Babylonians forever. It was all disloyalty to Jerusalem. That was the core. The core of the sin was lack of belief and faith and readiness to be redeemed. So, that says the Gemara, if that was the crime, why were they forgiven? So the Gemara says, they didn't really mean it. They acted as if they were saying that we're loyal to Nebuchadnezzar and we're never going to be redeemed. But deep down, they were really loyal to Israel. Deep down, they were loyal to redemption. They were loyal to Yerushalayim. They were sure that they would be redeemed. And that's why God also, he only acted. He made it look like they were going to be wiped out, but instead they weren't wiped out and they were actually saved. So really the deep underlying story of Megillat Esther is really that when it looks like Jews aren't loyal to Yerushalayim, we really are loyal to Yerushalayim. So that's why when it was time to create the festival, so they said, listen, we have to have 2 days. One day for the Jews that rested on the 14th. Another day for the Jews who rested on the 15th. But if the whole sin was lack of respect for Yerushalayim, in our celebration we need to show respect for Yerushalayim. So we can't say that it's a walled city from the days of Achashverosh, a walled city from the days of Shushan. It has to be a walled city from the days of Yoshua ben Nun, so that Yerushalayim will be considered a walled city. In fact, in Halacha, probably the only city that actually is treated as a walled city is Yerushalayim. Because we're not really sure about any other city, whether it's walled from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. But Yerushalayim, we know, was walled from the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. That's the one city that we're for sure that that's the day to read on the 15th. What's that?
Eruv in Yerushalayim. Do you need an
Eruv? So the way the ruling today is, even the really far out areas of Yerushalayim, like Ramot, Givat Ze'ev, they all read on the 15th.
No, Eruv. The
Eruv.
Do you need an
Eruv
on Yerushalayim?
Because
it's the wall.
In the old city.
But the walls are only the old city, so the rest needs an Eruv.
Yeah,
the old city wouldn't need an Eruv. That would be the wall.
Because you can see it from there.
Right, so wherever you could see another area which you could see, that you could eventually see the wall, that's all considered one big city, and that's why Yerushalayim has to be so central. Now there's an amazing thing that the Manos HaLevi says. The Manos HaLevi says, we know that Haman took a piece of wood that was 50 amos tall. So where did he get this wood from? So the Manos HaLevi said he took it from the Kodesh HaKodashim. He took it from the Beit HaMikdash. This wood was from the holiest of holies. And on this wood, what happened in the end? Who was hung on it?
Haman
was hung on it. So Haman was hung on the wood of Yerushalayim. That really, the Jews are loyal to Yerushalayim. And really, Yerushalayim caused Haman to fall. And maybe that's the meaning of the verse. The verse says, V'samti kisi be'elam. I'm going to put my throne in Elam, in the country of the Persians. In other words, Hashem put his place in Yerushalayim. He brought some of Yerushalayim to Shushan. And by bringing some of Yerushalayim to Shushan, that's how Haman was eventually lost. When Yerushalayim was rebuilt, they made a gate over Yerushalayim where they embroidered on top of the gate the picture of Shushan. It was called Sha'ar Shushan, the gate of Shushan. Because Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash really were connected to Shushan, and that's why we had to have another day to celebrate, to give honor to Yerushalayim. That's one idea. Yeah, question, Kevin.
Didn't Ahasuerus move to Shushan to move to his
throne?
To the throne. He wasn't there initially.
That's right. Yeah, he moved because he wanted to catch up to the throne, because he wanted to have a little bit of a connection to Shlomo HaMelech. So this is one approach. One approach is, why do we have 2 days? We have 2 days to commemorate the 2 days of resting. And it's important to give honor to Yerushalayim because the root of the miracle was loyalty to Yerushalayim, that the Jews are loyal to Yerushalayim, not that we're disloyal to Yerushalayim. I want to share a different approach, maybe a deeper approach. Rav Huttner points out the following problem. We know that the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah on Daf Zayin, that a person is obligated to get drunk on Purim during the meal to the point that he doesn't know about any differences. Ad lo yada, till the point that he doesn't know the difference, bein Arur Haman lebaruch Mordechai. Has to get drunk to the point that he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. He's got to be saying blessed Haman, cursed Mordechai. He's got to go totally lost. Doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. He's all mixed up. He's just totally drunk. That's the mitzvah of Purim. But you know, when a person is drunk on Purim, what do? They sing Purim songs. So what's the Purim song that everybody sings? Shoshanas Yaakov. Sing Mishenichnas Adar. We also sing Shoshanas Yaakov. So Shoshanas Yaakov means the city Shushan now belongs to Yaakov. Shoshanas Yaakov Tzahala V'Samecha. The city Shushan of Yaakov is celebrating, it's happy. Why? Be'osam Yachad, when they see together, Tchelas Mordechai, the royal garments of Mordechai. And then what's the whole ending of that song? Arur Haman, cursed is Haman, Asher Bikesh La'abdi, who wanted to destroy me. Baruch Mordechai, blessed is Mordechai, HaYehudi, who's the Jew, Arura Zeresh, cursed is Zeresh, Eishes Mafchidi, the wife of the one who frightened me, Brucha Esther, blessed is Esther, Badi, who's there for me. I understand. Isn't the point that we're supposed to not know the difference? What's going on? It's Purim. We're supposed to not know the difference between Mordechai and Haman. not know the difference between Esther and Zeresh. And here, what do we say? We say, no, Baruch Mordechai Yehudi, Arur Haman, Brucha Esther, Arura Zeresh. We do know the difference. But I thought it's about not knowing the difference. So what is it? To not know the difference or to yes know the difference? So here Rav Huttner says an amazing thing. This is amazing. He says, when you know that there's a difference between two things, you want them to look alike as much as possible. Because when they look alike as much as possible, you realize that you know there's a difference between them. The difference is beyond the surface. The difference is at the essential level, at the very root. At the very root, that's where there's the difference. So for example, we have a verse. The verse says, Halo ach Esav liYaakov. Behold, Esav is a brother of Jacob. Va'oav es Yaakov va'Esav sanesi. I love Jacob and I hate Esav. When Yaakov looks like Esav, but you know that they're different. So, but they look alike. But I know that they're different. I have to look deep to find the difference. When I look deep, oh, what a difference. What a difference. Yaakov and Esav, what a difference. Think about what happens. Yitzchak wants to give blessings. He wants to give the blessings to Esav. His wife Rivka hears and says, no, the blessings should go to Yaakov. Yaakov says, how can I go get the blessings? I'm soft, I'm smooth. My father's going to touch me. He's going to know I'm not Esav. So what does Rivka say? Your whole ruse, you know, put goat skins on your arms, pretend to be Esav. Yaakov goes in and he says, I am, Esav's your firstborn. So Yitzchak says, but you came so soon. So Yaakov says, well, God helped. He made me catch the game very quickly. So Yitzchak says, it doesn't sound like Esav. Doesn't sound like Esav. The sound is the sound of Yaakov. Come here, let me touch you. The hands are the hands of Esav, but the voice is the voice of Yaakov. So one second. I mean, it's Yaakov. You know you're supposed to imitate Esav now. So you have to mention God's name. What's Yaakov doing? He's pretending to be Esav. He's supposed to be hairy. He mentions God's name. But that's exactly the point. When he's pretending to be Esav, he can only pretend so far. The inside of Yaakov comes out. But when does the inside of Yaakov come out? And is the real difference between Yaakov and Esav? When they look alike on the outside. On the outside, he's like Esav. He's the hunter, and he's hairy, and he's lying, and he's deceitful. But then the inside comes out. Oh, but Hashem helped me. It's really the hand of Hashem. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. When they look alike on the outside, then you go deep. You say, oh, but boy, is there a difference. This is on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we have the mitzvah of the two goats. One goat becomes a carbon for Hashem with the blood and the holiest of holies. The other goat is sent to the wilderness and dropped off of a cliff. So the two goats, the halach is, they have to be the same age. They have to look alike. They have to be the same weight. They have to be the same value. And then one is to the wilderness and one is in the holiest of holies. Wow, what a difference. But they're so alike. That's why. Because one is Yaakov and one is Esav. And they look alike. When they look alike, you go deep. Well, I know there's a difference. A big difference. Wow, this one is to the wilderness and this is for Hashem. Says Rav Huttner, that's what Purim is. Purim is to get drunk. And when you're drunk, to say, blessed on Haman and cursed on Mordechai. To not know the difference between Mordechai and Haman. But you know that deep down there's got to be a really big difference. So when you know that deep down there's a really big difference, you look deep down, and then you sing Shoshanas Yaakov, and you say Baruch Mordechai HaYehudi, and Arur Haman, and you say Brucha Esther, and Arura Zeresh. Once you, on the outside, they look alike, you go deep inside. When you go deep inside, wow, that's a real difference. There's a real difference between Esav and Yaakov, between Mordechai and Haman. So my Rebbe, the Stachina Rebbe, says, okay, let's now go the other way. What did Rav Huttner say? Rav Huttner says, when you know there's a difference and you want to show that it's a deep difference, so then on the outside everything is alike. Because by being on the outside alike, you know to look deep and you find that on the deep level there's a real difference. What about the other way? If you want to show that on the deep level there's a real unity, you want to show on the deep level there's a real deep unity. How do you do that? By on the outside being a difference. If on the outside there's a difference, this one is this way and that one is that way, and they're different, but you know that really deep down there's a unity, by the fact that on the outside they're different, that forces you to look deep, and you find the deep unity, the real, real underlying unity. that the real underlying unity is not that they seemingly are alike, they're essentially alike. They're so alike deep down, they're so united deep down that as different as they are on the outside, they're totally united. All the differences on the outside don't matter. They're still totally, totally united. So you think about, you know, the Hebrew letters. If you take the letter Aleph, and you have again a letter Aleph. So two times Aleph is not a unity. But if you put Aleph together with Beis, it's now a new word, Av, a father. That's already a unity. They're both parts of one word, Av. They're different. But if they be the same on the outside, Aleph and Aleph, you don't understand that. There's an Aleph and that's an Aleph. They're divided. They're not united. But when they look different on the outside, Aleph and Beis, then you have a real unity, a deep unity. That's one of the ideas of Purim. The idea of Purim is to show that Jewish unity is so deep that even when Jews are totally different, some Jews are observing on the 14th and other Jews are observing on the 15th, they're really all deeply united. They're really deeply united deep down. Rav Kook writes in the end of Maseches Brachos, the last Gemara in Brachos is, Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. Torah scholars increase peace in the world. So Rav Kook asks, but the Torah scholars are always fighting. They're always fighting. Ravina and Rava and Abaye, they're always arguing. How do they increase peace in the world? He says, because that's a deeper peace. Because each one is only revealing one aspect of the big truth of God. So this one reveals one aspect, and that one reveals another aspect, and together you have a whole picture, a bigger picture of a deeper truth. This is, again, this is the answer to the question we began with. The whole story of Purim is that how was Esther saved? By Knossos Kol HaYehudim, all the Jews gathering and becoming united. So then why are we celebrating on two separate days? The walled cities celebrate on the 15th. Yerushalayim is on the 15th. The unwalled cities are on the 14th. Why celebrate on 2 days if the whole route was being united? The answer is because we're celebrating a very deep unity. A deep unity is so deep that even when we're different, we're still united. Even though this one is the 15th and this one is the 14th, this one is walled, this one is open, but deep down there's such a unity that all the differences on the outside don't make a difference. All the differences on the outside add up together to become a really deep unity, a very great unity. That's the awesomeness of Purim. And that might be related to this week's Parsha, because on this week we start with the first of the four special readings. The reading of this week is the reading of the half shekels, that every Jew, every Jewish man over the age of 20 had to give a half shekel to fund the temple. And the Torah says that the shekel itself weighed 20 little barley seeds worth of silver, 20 gerah. The half shekel was 10 gerah. The Kabbalists say that 10 is a number of a unity of lots of pieces. 10 is when you have a minyan, because until you have 10, you're not all united yet. 9 is separate. You get to 10, now you have a unit of the whole 10 that represents the whole Jewish nation. Now you have a unity of 10. The Jewish nation is built on 10. God said that in 10 statements he made the world. But the Kabbalists say the opposite of the Jews are built on 11. That's why Haman has 10 sons, because Haman and his 10 sons is a total of 11. That's why in Parshas Vayishlach, the Torah says that Esav had 11 alufim, 11 princes. They are 11 and we are 10. Because when you're 11, you're not united. It's 10 and 1. It's not all 1. But when it's 10, then it's really united. And the Jewish people, they are about the unity, and a very deep unity. That even though on the externals there's division, deep down, there's a very, very deep unity. That's our parsha. Hashem tells Moshe, Vayakel Moshe. Moshe gathers all the people. He gathers them together. He unites them. And he tells them together the mitzvah of Shabbos. And he tells them together about building the Mishkan. Because through a very deep unity, that's the way to overcome all the challenges of the sin of the golden calf and how to repair it. So that's another answer. The answer as to why we have one date for the walled cities and another date for the unwalled cities is because we want to recreate unity. Therefore, on the externals, we are divided and different to push us to a deeper level. On the deeper level, we're so united that each little piece on the externals is adding to the whole kaleidoscope. It's adding to the picture. This is some yellow, this is some green, this is some blue. And all together, it becomes the united, beautiful picture. Without any color, it wouldn't be complete. And so because Purim is about Jewish unity, That's why there are 2 days. There's the walled city and the unwalled city, to show that despite all the divisions, deep down there's a tremendous unity. The divisions themselves are all adding to the unity. Each one is adding an aspect. That's the Talmidei Chachamim increase peace in the world. The Talmidei Chachamim, this one adds this aspect of truth, that one adds that's that aspect of truth, and together that creates the unity. So we should all merit to feel the unity with other Jews, to see the unity of Hashem running the world, that Amalek and all of the divisions should be defeated, and we should merit to celebrate Purim in Yerushalayim Abnuya, hopefully in Herabi Ameinu. Oh, thank you.